Welcome to Listen to Older Voices, a program produced for Uniting Melba and podcast through the Toorak Times. It's always a pleasure to bring you, through their stories, life and times of older people in our community. All very interesting, all very different, and all very entertaining. This is a special Baby Boomers edition. I'm Rob Greaves, and it's my pleasure to host this second of a four-part program featuring the story of Baby Boomer musician John Arthur Grant. In part one, we learned that John was born in 1953 and moved from Canberra to Melbourne at the age of three, where he was exposed to a lot of live piano in the home, and he was able to build on his natural ability to become more than just an accomplished pianist. He was on the edge of becoming a concert pianist when he was seduced by the emerging music of the 1960s. In fact, this week we learned that he actually goes to Melbourne University to study concert piano and composition. But the progressive music of the 60s took him over, and we learn a little bit more about his early band life. However, following a less than successful career in the 60s with his own bands, he begins to get work in the 70s with a range of well-known artists that included Phil Manning, Jim Keys, and also the Eurogliders and Mike Rudd. The Manning Keys group, which he joined, was a short-lived group, but for a while it looked like this would be the one that he really made it in. But then we learn an inept English producer brought in to do their album ended up bringing the group to its knees. We pick up now with John talking about how he came to go to Melbourne University's Conservatorium of Music.
I did, in fact, go to Melbourne University Conservatorium.
So you did? Okay.
I did. I gave in to those pressures because I thought, this might be good for me, and I'll just do it for a couple of years, and then I'll leave.
Whatever
it is. I never actually intended to do the whole four-year course. It was a four-year bachelor course.
Did you do the course in the end?
I did 2 years.
Right. Okay. Before I ask you, did you enjoy those 2 years at university? Or?
Yes, I did. Piano was still my major subject, so I was learning from a concert pianist educator at the conservatorium and playing lots of very complex classical piano. At the same time, I was studying composition for the first time, actually studying composition with a teacher called Ian Bonython, who sadly died a few years later. And yes, the university life and the music that I learned about there has been very valuable for me ever since. Mm. I have a tiny bit of regret that I actually didn't do the whole course and stick it out a bit longer.
Were you still living at home at that stage?
Or? Yes, I was, yes.
Right. Did you find that a difficult thing, or was it still easy? Because you're becoming a young man now, you're 18, 19, 20.
Yeah.
Was that still easy to do, or
was
the
easy.
Pull? It was easy.
It was easy enough, yeah.
So when did you actually leave home?
I left home the year after I left university. I did the 2 years at university, playing with the rock band again that had grown out of my high school bands. And we were gigging around the place a little bit, earning a tiny bit of money here and there. And
who were your influences at that stage in the rock world?
Progressive rock bands. Emerson, Lake and Palmer, Deep Purple. That was the very beginnings of what became heavy metal. Deep Purple, I consider to be a progressive rock band. Yeah, so many more. But Led Zeppelin, not a band you would associate with keyboards, but I was influenced as much by guitarists and what they were doing as I was by keyboards. So Led Zeppelin, a year or two before Cream and Jimi Hendrix, I was in love with them as much as I was a few years earlier with the Beatles, probably.
So leaving university, was it at the end of the year or was it during the semester?
It was the start of the third year.
Yeah. Who was shocked most, your mother or your teacher?
I didn't see my teacher for a little while, and I didn't see her very much after that. So she would have been disappointed. My mother was very disappointed, yeah.
Yeah. So you leave university, what do you go and do? How do you survive?
I was young and naive. I thought that all I had to do was leave and things would sort of fall into place.
I think there'd be very few people from our generation listening to this who wouldn't relate to that.
In some form or another, I suppose. That's, right. Yeah. That's my only defence. I was in a band, but that band didn't last very long. And the only reason I've been able to go to university at all was because of the Commonwealth Scholarship
system
which gave you like something like $50 a month or something, which was almost enough to survive on if you were living at home, as I was. But so I gave that away. I gave that up, and found myself having to do odd jobs to support myself. Became a cleaner. I eventually became a cab driver for a couple of years because that was something you could do, here and there. Didn't have to be regular hours necessarily. So I did stuff like that for a few years while I was playing in bands, trying to make it.
So this is the period when you actually left home and went into a shared house.
I left home. I got married for the first time in that period. A few years later, we had a daughter. That's we're jumping ahead a couple of years now to 76. But
right, getting married—that's a big deal for most people. You're really basically unemployed. You're doing odd jobs, and that must have been a big commitment for you. Not just—I mean, marrying's a commitment, but taking it on without an income.
Yes,
but you just did it.
Yep,
and life worked out for you for a while.
Yes. The marriage didn't last, and some might have said the writing was on the wall. But we did it. Yeah,
yeah.
We were young and naive. Yes.
Yeah. Another good defence, that one, for everything. Yes. So, is this also moving into the period when you actually started to make some money from rock music with your band?
Almost. Pretty soon after, in 73. We'd be now 73, 74. I joined a band called Windjammer in the Eltham area. One of my earlier bands had ended up playing in the Eltham area at Sunday Super Shows. A group of Eltham musicians put on regular shows as a place to play.
Right.
The Research Hall, Research being the suburb just beyond Eltham. The Super Shows were started by a band called Reuben Tice, or the Reuben Tice Memorial Band, an institution in the Eltham area for many years. Roger Davies on guitar and lots of other crazy people. One of the bands that played in the Super Shows that I saw in an early band was called Frame. Frame had a very young Greg McCainch and Shirley Strawn and Freddie Storks. After Frame split up, they went on to form another band with Red Simons and Bob Starkey. Eventually, I saw all Skyhook's early gigs in the Eltham area. I saw I knew all the songs off their first album before they recorded them.
Yeah,
going back to Frame, the band that some of them were in before Skyhook's. The guitarist from that band formed a band with me after Frame split up. The band's called Windjammer, and we were a progressive rock band, pretty much. We played only our own material. It was all instrumental, with very little vocals. Pat O'Brien was the guitarist. We wrote most of the material. We had David Williams, also known as Daffy or Daff Williams, on flute. He became a recording engineer and with York Street Recording Studios a few years later and recorded a lot of Australian rock and roll history in the late 70s and 80s. We had Gordon McLean on drums, who later on went on to Captain Matchbox. Captain Matchbox has also got their start playing at Eltham Super Shows at the Research Hall. I saw their early gigs up there as well. So Windjammer played at Research Super Shows, of course, but we also played other gigs around the area and parties, and we travelled to Hamilton to play at a school concert, invited by the school there. I don't know what they were thinking, but we all travelled out there in a big bus. We played the first two Reefer Cabarets. The first one was Dallas Brooks Hall, of all places, to put on a show
that one.
called the Reefer Cabaret. We were the first band on, and we played the the second one, which was at Ormond Hall as well.
Yeah, that those gigs were really big deals in that day, weren't they, in that period, because they attracted huge audiences. They attracted massive audiences. So you must have felt that, really, you were on the edge of really making it at that period.
Well, we did some really basic recording, but I got frustrated with the band after about 18 months or perhaps getting close to 2 years.
What, not progressive enough, not moving ahead or what? What was the reason you were frustrated?
I struggled to remember. I just remember the feeling of frustration. Perhaps it's because we weren't doing that many gigs. Perhaps it's because we weren't making an income from it.
Okay.
Yeah. Perhaps my frustration was I really wanted to feel like I was progressing in music. I had to be making an income and not doing some of the other day jobs that I was forced to do.
Sure. So what did you do about it?
Well, I left the band, not knowing what I was going to do.
Listen to Older Voices, where stories from the past find a home in the present. I'm Rob Greaves and I'm talking with John Arthur Grant, and John is sharing some of the frustrations he experienced popping in and out of bands during the mid to late 70s.
But as it happened, I got a call from a drummer that I'd known in the Rosanna area a few years earlier, and he said, would you like to come and have a jam with this band that we're getting together called Freeway? And they were based in the city. Freeway was put together by Kristen Barker, a bass player and vocalist, songwriter with Steve Welch on guitar. And Kristen wanted to form a band with Frank Chick on vocals, had a really strong voice. So Frank was more well known at the time for being a roadie. He roadied for the Dingoes and the Strangers. But he had a very powerful voice. It was obvious when he opened his mouth. So Kristen and wanted to form a band with Frank. Got Steve Welch, a guitarist, on board eventually after a few false starts. I got Bill Lincoln on drums and me on keyboards. Kristen's brother was Adrian Barker, who was in the management scene and had agency. So Kristen had quite a bit of experience in working with bands and doing lots of gigs. So we found ourselves working quite quickly, playing 3-4 gigs a week around Melbourne,
right,
pubs and so on.
So the income is starting to come in?
The income's starting to come in a small way. Yeah, you know, subsistence income.
That's probably about the maximum level for most Australian musicians, unless you make that really top tier anyway.
That's right.
So you're never going to make a lot of money.
That's exactly right, yes, because you're, even if you've got decent money for a gig here and there, you've got roadies to pay. You've got the truck. You may be hiring a PA on an ongoing basis. Every act brought in their own PA to the pubs or whatever the venue was. So no, there's never enough left at the end.
So for how many more years did your popular music bent continue on for?
It still continues.
Still continues.
Okay. I'm still playing in bands. In fact, it now marks 50 years this year since I started playing in bands in high school. I've always played in bands. I've never stopped.
Right.
But it's just that all these other things have happened along the way as well.
So what point in your music career does the split off happen, where you start diverging into parallel things, but in that more classical vein?
A few years later, things started to split. Freeway had some success in that we recorded an album, released a single. It was the album and single were both called Riding High, and it was a top 20, top 30 hit, especially in Melbourne.
Thank you.
So that eventually disintegrated. Later on in the band, we had Peter Laffey joined on guitar. He later went on to Mondo Rock and some other bands after that.
Listen to older voices. Ageless Radio.
That band disintegrated. I met a guy called Graham Barker. I had met him in anyway. He wanted to form a band, and the band was called Palais. I didn't have any input into the music of Freeway. Freeway was Kristen, the bass player and guitarist, writing very rock-based commercial pop music, yep. Rock pop rock music. It was sort of quite a direction away from the progressive rock I've been doing in the previous band. With Graham Barker, who's one of the most talented people I've ever known, a great songwriter, I wrote quite a few songs with him, and we formed a band called Palais that I really hoped would be the band that would get me and a bit of my music somewhere. And we ended up working around pubs regularly too, and did a little tour to Adelaide. But sadly, not making any decent recordings, and the band disintegrated when Graham left the band. So I got another phone call from Phil Manning, and I joined the Phil Manning band, and it was called the Manning Keys Band at first. It's a little interesting part of rock, Australian rock history that's not known about Jim Keys and Phil Manning.
A very unusual connection there, I would have thought.
They'd written some songs together, they'd come together somehow, right, and they had an album's worth of songs. And they got a band together, they had a manager. We had some New Zealand members of the band who'd come over specifically for it, and we spent a few months not working live, just rehearsing, and then starting to record the album, the Manny Keys album. Which could have been a major part of, as I said, a part of Ozrock history. But the manager brought in an English producer. I think his name was David Hitchcock. He'd produced an early Genesis album. He spent a lot of time recording, went over budget, hadn't finished the album, and decided that the band in its current form wouldn't make it. Wouldn't make it. The aim was to record an album to release on the international market. And the overseas producer brought in with that aim basically ended up breaking up the band. Phil and Jim split up. The album was completed under the name Manning. And if you can find that album anywhere, you'll find that most of the songs on it are written by Manning Keys.
Right.
But Jim's not on the album.
Not mentioned.
He's not mentioned anywhere. It's somewhat tragic.
That is tragic, yes.
So that gave me some very good recording experience. I'd already been in the studio a bit, but it gave me some good recording experience.
It must be frustrating for you because, I mean, it's like the ball's ring is just about there and you're almost grabbing it and it's gone again.
That's right. And one of the songs was a minor hit, but, it you know, with Jim and Phil together promoting it and Jim talking about it and the live buzz from two performers who were very big at the time. People forget how big a name Phil Manning had in the mid, even late 70s. So, yes, it was. It was frustrating then because the band went on the road and it sort of dribbled into just another Phil Manning band, of which there'd been a handful through the 70s. And the money didn't get any better. We toured all over the country, went to Phil's home state of Tassie, went up to Queensland, toured around Sydney a lot, around Melbourne pubs a lot. You know, the two gigs on a Saturday afternoon and evening, as typically happened. A lot of work over the next year or so, and it basically came
from a lot of work for little return.
At very little return, it sort of dribbled away. We also did a little known live album when we went to New Zealand once in Christchurch. So that was a bit disappointing. It was a lot of fun at times, but it was somewhat disappointing in terms of where am I going.
Next week in part three of his story, we move into the 1980s and we learn John moves into freelancing with his music abilities and how financially things take a major positive turn, but in a most unusual way. That's next week. Listen to Older Voices with John Arthur Grant.
Listen to Older Voices is produced by Rob Greaves at the Melbourne Community Support Program on behalf of Wesley Mission Victoria. The program is supported by financial assistance from the Commonwealth Government through the Commonwealth Home Support Program and is brought to you through the Toorak Times.